The Print Off the Cuff, presented by IIFL Wealth and Asset Management, powered by K. Raheja Corp, Corporate Partner, AU Small Finance Bank, in alliance with Jindal Steel & Power Limited and Indraprastha Polo Hospitals, airline partner SpiceJet.
A mystic, a yoga guru, a spiritual leader, a man with an uber-cool swagger. All these phrases and many more have been used to describe Sadhguru. He had recently embarked on a journey from London to India as part of a Safe Soil campaign. Sadhguru has millions of followers across the world, ranging from the younger to the older generation. Please welcome to the Print, Sadhguru. He will be in conversation with the Print's editor-in-chief, Shekhar Gupta. So without any delay, let's begin this special edition of the Print OTC.
And with my colleague, Senior Associate Editor, Neelam Pandey. Sadhguru, namaskar.
Namaskar.
Welcome to this Sin City called New Delhi, Latian's Delhi. But we are blessed to have you here. Tell us about, how Safe Soil different from Safe Water, Safe Rivers, Safe Environment, Save carbon dioxide, save anything.
Is somebody trying to save carbon dioxide also?
I mean, people are trying to reduce it. They are saving, they are not expending carbon
dioxide. That is getting rid of it, not saving it. So, soil is the basis of our existence, and soil is a living entity unlike carbon dioxide. Soil is the largest living system, not just on this planet, in this known universe. Though we as life are just a consequence of what's happening within the 15 to 18 inches of topsoil, unfortunately we have addressed it as an inert substance, used it as a resource and brought it to a point where today soil scientists are using the term soil extinction, that we are heading towards soil extinction. The word extinction normally, in our minds brought up a dinosaur or a dodo into picture, but now soil extinction is what they're talking about. Soil extinction is extinction of life. There are many other environmental concerns. I'm not saying they're not of significance. They are of significance, but soil is the fundamental of life, the very foundations of our existence and future life on this planet. So, safe soil is of a very different nature than other environmental issues, because other environmental issues have conflicting factors. There are economic aspects involved which will conflict with that, and this is why endless debates are going on about that. About enhancing soil organic content and soil richness, there is no lobby, there is no industry, there is no one human being on the planet who is against it. Everybody is for it. So this is very important. The purpose of safe soil is to separate soil from other complex ecological issues or environmental issues, which will naturally run into endless debates because so many interests are involved and world has to be addressed, taking everything into consideration. So soil is something which is a separate issue. We want to separate that issue from other aspects so that this can be addressed as a life issue, as an existential issue, not as an environmental issue.
So, what do you mean by increasing organic content of the soil?
Serving breakfast, lunch, dinner for the organisms, that's all it means. Soil is a living entity, means a handful of soil can have more than 8 to 10 billion organisms in it.
That's right.
And zillions of organisms across the world and millions of species. To what extent means the tops? Soil scientists are openly admitting that they do not even know 1% of the organisms or the species present in the soil. 1% of the species is not in their knowledge. So that is the level of complexity. But right now, 27,000 species per year are going extinct on an average according to UNFAO. So at this rate, if we go, in another 25 to 40 years' time…
These are microorganisms, microorganisms
and in turn insects and other things. 82% of the biomass insects have been destroyed in the last 7 years as a consequence of microorganisms going dead. See, how the evolution happens is, there is one microorganism with a certain design. There is another one which is a little larger microorganism. There's another one which is more than micro, it is visible, it, you know, to a very keen eye. But the same design, there could be 15 to 35 species, exactly same design. They're just getting larger, 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 larger to a point where one day they may become a more complex worm or insect or you and me.
So, if I may be a little cheeky, you believe in Darwin and evolution, not in creation.
See, we must understand this. Darwin spoke about this only about 150 years ago. Adiyogi spoke about this over 15,000 years ago. When they asked him, how did life happen like this, such complexity of life, how did it happen? When he was asked, he said the first life was fish or it was waterborne life. Then he said the second is a turtle, that means it walked onto the land.
Amphibious.
You know the whole process of the 10 avatars we are talking about. Today people may be unfortunately looking at it as a religious process or something. No, they're just talking about evolution. Fish, amphibious life, then they're talking about more complex evolved life in the form of mammals, which is a wild boar, and then comes half man, half animal, dwarfed man, full-fledged man but very volatile, next is a peaceful man, a loving man, a meditative man, a mystical man. This is how it's supposed to evolve. This is not talking about one person. This is talking about the evolution of life on this planet. Whatever Adiyogi spoke over 15,000 years ago is very much in parallel to what Darwin later on said in a different language, in a different kind of detail.
So what do we say for a country like America, modern technology-driven country like America, which such a large number of people think Darwin was a nut. Forget going back to Adiyogi. They just think that it's sacrilege to say that life…
See, if you are a nut, all you need is a bolt to hold things together.
That's a good point. So, who's the bolt there? What is the bolt there?
Science is the bolt and technology is the bolt.
So, see, that is the difference. The guru who speaks science.
Sadhguru, when you go and speak with global leaders about this, everybody says, yes, 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 wonderful idea. I have seen your brochure, because it's the kind of thing which nobody can dispute, you're right. It's not political, it's not in conflict with anything. But who actually does anything about it? Give us some good examples.
Well, see, right now, the reason why we are trying to move 3.5 to 4 billion people on the planet is, tell me in which nation has 60% of the adult population ever stood up and said they are concerned about the long-term well-being of their nation, they are concerned about the future of their children. When have they spoken? All they are asking is two rupees reduction in the petrol price, 1% deduction in their income tax and something else and something else. They are getting those trinkets. We have never stood up and asked, not only in this country, in no country have they done this. This is why we are trying to move 60% of the adult population to express their concern about soil. We have written to 730 political parties on the planet to include soil as a part of their election manifestos and express their concern, so that once people express their concern, it will naturally reflect in the political philosophy of every party. So this is the aim of this. Right now, the social media metrics are telling us that we have moved, or over 2.5 billion people have spoken about soil since 21st of March. But we are not satisfied with that number. We want to move close to 4 billion so that 60% have spoken. If you are a political leader, if 60% of the population is speaking one language, will you speak against it in a democratic country?
You certainly won't, yes. So, how do you add organic content to soil? How do you add that breakfast, lunch, dinner?
See, this is something that has to sink into everybody's minds, very important, because everybody thinks it's somewhere else. There are only two sources of organic content, plant life and animal life. There is simply nothing else, not on this planet, not in the known universe. There is no other source of organic content other than plant life and animal life. So only these two things can add organic content. Right now, if you look at a farm, especially in big Western countries or even in India, if you look at the farm, it is all brown soil and machines. There is no plant life, there is no animal life. So where is the organic content? That is why the depletion has happened. The problem with machines is they don't shit. We need to understand this. They let out carbon dioxide or monoxide into the air, but nothing goes back into the soil. This is the thing about the animal. When the animal worked on it, it also, whatever it's eaten, it also put it back in a different form into the soil, where a whole lot of organisms are waiting for that to come. See, this is something people are looking at in a certain way. This is the way creation is. What one organism excretes is food for another organism till it dies. When it dies, of course, its body becomes the food. But till then, it is one organism's excretion which is the food for another organism. This is the whole design. This cannot be a better design because it's self-sustaining circular economy of the existence, all right? So today we have disrupted this hugely. The disruption is at various levels, but one significant disruption is this. 54% of the world's soil is plowed full-on, that is full-on agriculture. Another 18 to 20% is partial agriculture. So nearly 71% of the world's land is plowed.
Arable land.
Yes, leaving the forests, of course, the land. And 4.2% of the world's land is paved because they are urban areas. So together, 76% of the world's land is either plowed or paved, which means there is no photosynthesis, there is no plant life, there is no animal life, largely. Oh, you may take a dog for a walk and it poops around, that is not the solution. It needs large-scale circulation of this. That could only happen if there are a substantial number of animals and plant life also. Why did this go out? Somewhere in 1918, a German scientist came up for the first time with nitrogenous fertilizer. When people took this and threw it on their lands, like magic it worked. Things just burst out, something that they had never seen. In many parts of India, our yields went up by over 300%, three times over. So it was literally magic powder. Once you got this magic powder, you started throwing it everywhere, things burst out like that. So naturally, people got absolutely enamored with that. And also, we had famine situations in the past. Crippling famines, devastating famines which took millions of lives. Our hangover of famines, we want to get over that, so we made policies as to how to use chemicals and get over that, which we did achieve. We did enhance the life expectancy in this country from in 1947, it is 28 years. Can you believe that? Both of us have no right to live. This girl may be. I don't want to guess that, okay?
Yes.
But you and me shouldn't be alive if 28 is the average life expectancy. Now, in the 75 years, we moved it to 73, 74 years of age, which is a significant achievement for a nation like ours, for any nation. It's a great achievement. But this has happened mainly because of that Green Revolution. So that Green Revolution was an effort to bridge ourselves across famine situations, because in 1940s, we had been through devastating famines. We got onto a bridge, you get onto your bridge to get to the other side. But you got onto your bridge and if you never got off, you are on a bridge to nowhere.
Mm.
So this is the mistake we have done. This is the mistake the whole world has done one way or the other. So it's time to get down now. Now we have enough technologies, enough capability, enough transportation capabilities, because if food doesn't grow here, we can bring it from there. This was never possible, I'm saying. 50 years ago, this was never possible. Today, we can plan the global agricultural production and move food where we want. There are enormous capabilities.
Although right now it's...
I get you. You'll come to Ukraine.
Yes, I have time to be saying this. You always read my mind.
So, these capabilities are there. This is a time for the bridge to land and once again see how to regenerate the land. We must bring back plant life and animal life back, not for work anymore, because work is being done by the machines, but the machines that we employed are crude machines which turn the land upside down. It's time robotics gets into agriculture, where like a man or a woman, it can go day and night 24 hours if you put the necessary charge. 24 hours it can work in the agricultural field without disturbing the entire ecosystem as a tractor or other big machines are doing right now. So we need to move in that direction. But the first and foremost thing is to recognize that soil is a living system. It is not an inert substance, as 85% of the nations are still considering soil as an inert substance.
Okay, since you since you read my mind on Ukraine, the question is that Ukraine has just become a spark. But even before Ukraine, the idea that everybody should be self-sufficient, that you should not be dependent on what needs to become from outside. Now, okay, some natural resources like oil you can't help. Even the motorcycle you ride runs on oil, so it has to come from somewhere. Many countries, most countries don't have it, some countries have it. But when it comes to food, which is food security is even more important than fuel security, energy security, what do nations do now? Because you know that you are then held to ransom by instability someplace else, or some despot somewhere gets it into his head that he has to occupy another country.
I wouldn't go about using such words as you are using. You were free to do it, but I will not use such words. All I am saying is, the idea of moving towards a market economy was to tone down our nationalities, our national identities,
right,
and marketplace and produce will rule the world. Well, we've still not matured to that place. When it's advantageous, we talk about World Trade Organization. The moment it's not advantageous, we say that's nothing, we will do bilateral trade. This is going on, and once again, world is moving towards bilateralism. They've coined some new word, trust something, some new word they've come up with, the West. Now, how the countries that they trust, with them they will have world trade. With the rest, they won't have. So essentially, we are talking about once again dividing the world. After World War II, we thought…
I think minilateralism it's called, when you have a few countries…
No, they have come up with a new word for that, new term. Anyway, after World War II, everybody's thinking was, this national identity within Europe caused so much ruckus and death and horrendous situations, so we should go beyond this. That was the idea of United Nations, that is the idea of WTO, at least on the surface we believed so. And the idea was tone down our nationality to manage our administrations. But in the international arena, nationalities need not be rubbed in each other's faces. But since then, so many wars have happened. When conflict happens, nationality stands up, because that's the only way you can manage a conflict. If I don't make you believe that you should die for your country, where is India going to fight any war with anybody? And if you don't fight, somebody else will be sitting here in Delhi, all right? So this is a complex issue. It's not something that we can just sort out in an interview like this. But unfortunately, we moved that way. But I'm talking about soil and ecology. When it comes to soil and ecology, our national borders mean nothing. This is a human problem. This is a very human issue, that we think planet is a cake, we can cut it into pieces and take it for ourselves. We can cut it into pieces for administrative and political purposes, but we can't absolutely cut it into pieces. Right now, that's what we're trying to do, and it's not going to work. When it comes to soil, we must understand it's a unifying factor. So this is also necessary when nations have grown into such power. Nationality, race, religion, caste, creed, gender, we have found hundreds of ways how to divide ourselves. And unfortunately, as human beings, we are super empowered to a point we can destroy this planet many times over. When we have this power, I think finding some common factors is very important. Soil is definitely that common factor, that we all come from it, we all thrive upon it, when we die, at least we go back to it. The only choice we have is to understand that we are all part of the soil, either we get it now or we get it when we are buried. That's a choice.
Absolutely. So, Sadhguru, you have millions and tens of millions of devotees, and we spread word among our subscribers and sponsors, and we were having this conversation. So, there are some questions from them. Neelam, want to ask the first one, and then I'll ask some more.
So, one of us.
And some of these are straightforward, free Isha advice. Everybody wants to sort out their lives and their minds with one question.
Yeah, so Ramakrishna Prayag, he's the Associate Vice President with Corporate Communication, Jindal Steel, and Power is one of our sponsors. He wants to know, people start making comparisons with others and get jealous. And when we talk about karma, they don't believe it. How do you convince such people?
If nobody is jealous of you, that means you're not doing anything worthwhile.
Okay.
So, the transformation should be in them, that they should not waste their life looking at somebody else's success. And above all, this is such a brief life. If you are exuberant and joyful, this is too brief a life. I feel like I was born day before yesterday, but I'm 65. I can't even believe I'm 65. I thought 65 is the age to die, but I'm here, very alive. So,
were you born in 1957?
Yep.
Yeah, so join the club.
So, there is no time to look at somebody and feel, fire in your stomach for what they are doing. For what potential human being carries, this 60, 70 or 80 years of active life that you're given is really nothing. So, ask them not to waste their time looking at how somebody else is successful. You see, success is about finding full expression to who you are. It's not about being better than somebody.
Right.
Sadhguru, that gives me the cue, gives me the thread. Success is not about being better than anybody, but so much energy, so much hot air, and you talked about distractions or talked about misplaced priorities like 2 rupee reduction on fuel price.
No, I'm not saying that's not important.
But
I'm saying
people,
only these things we are asking. We are not asking for bigger things.
You said people vote based on that, but not asking for bigger things like, say, conservation of soil. It's my quality of life and my children's and my grandchildren's quality of life. Does the same thing apply to religion? Now, if you see the current thing that's going on, and I will avoid using any adjectives because you didn't like my using the word despot for Putin. No, I didn't say you didn't like, you said you won't use it. I'm free to use it. When you see every evening these arguments, whether this is a shivling or this is a fountain, does Lord Shiva bother?
Is that a question?
Yes.
So then I'm saying you must find a better place to spend in the evening than watching a television channel. Nowhere else is this debate happening.
Yes.
So, I'm always with people. Nobody is debating these things. There are so many other things which are important for their lives. So, there are some aspects which are of concern because they're iconic places. But starting that with everything else doesn't make sense. Anyway, that is not the debate of the nation right now.
Right.
That is, unfortunately, I'm sorry, I'm not. I don't want to be disparaging about the journalists because this is a free market. There are over 200 channels. Everybody has to find their bit of foothold in the thing. How can anybody run 200 channels, news channels, and get watched? What news can they do? They'll have to manufacture something because the same thing is being reported across 200. What will I watch? How will I watch? So, everybody is kicking up a whole lot of debate. The more heat, the better. There are fire, flames burning in the, in the television channel, the design is flames coming up. You can as well use yourself to be a dragon.
we call them Ravan channels because they have 10 heads and an anchor.
So, whatever it is, it's a reality. I think at some point it'll get leveled out, maybe this...
But Sadhguru, you are a wise man and you have devotees.
I am not a white man.
I am wise.
Wise man. I got you.
You are a wise man. No, I will not accuse you of being a white man. I may accuse you of being a wise man, which puts a big burden on you. Now, there are these ongoing issues. Ayodhya was one, which is now settled by the Supreme Court. Other issues. There's one side that believes, or that is a constitutional position, that there was a law passed by parliament. So all other places of worship should remain as they are. There's no point digging up the past. But there is another side to it. What is your solution? I'm not saying which side you are on. What is your solution?
You want to talk about Kashi, Mathura. Shekhar, yes, will do one thing. Right. After this rally is over, after a few months, I will come to Kashi. You come there. We will sit down and talk about Kashi. If you want Mathura also, we can sit there and talk about Mathura. Because there are realities, there are complexities, there is history, there is social situations, there is religion, there is so much in that. Just making a comment looks like I'm taking some sides, because I'm not ever interested in taking sides.
We know that.
But you should come to Kashi. We will sit down and talk about Kashi, what Kashi is, why it is important. It is not about this religion, that religion. Why a place like that is important for a nation and a culture and for the world. I'm saying for the world because the word Kashi means a tower of light. Let me talk about that, not the controversy. A tower of light means that we found a way. This is very difficult for a journalist to even accept, all right? But let me say it, because you said I'm wise. I'm saying an unwise thing to you. Tower of light means there is a whole methodology, or if you want to call it science, there is a science with which you can create a certain amount of light. Light means not physical light as you're thinking. Light means something that brings clarity to you, something that shows the way in your life. So that's what the word guru also means. Gu means darkness, ru means dispeller. Somebody who dispels your darkness is your light. So in that sense, we created such spaces with which led millions of people through generations towards their well-being and whatever else. It's not just the question of belief, because this is a land of seeking. This has never been a land of belief. So such things were made, and that is important for the entire world, because as the cerebral activity in the world goes up, as intellectual development happens large scale, never before in the history of humanity, so many people could think for themselves. Thinking was limited to a small number of people in a given society. So today, across the board, whether they're thinking right or wrong, you can debate, but they're thinking at least. Once they start thinking, somewhere in their mind, even if you completely disagree with me, somewhere in my mind I have a logical structure to what I am speaking, and in your mind you have a logical structure to what you are speaking. Two people argue, two people fight, because both of them believe they are right, isn't it? We must first understand and respect this. Two people start an argument. Why? Because you believe what you are saying is right, I believe what I am saying is right. Well, if we want to really come to what is the truth about what both of us are saying, are both of us wrong, both of us right, or have we missed something here and there, or you got a part of it and I got a part of it, this is the reality of life. So this has relevance for the future, because as intellectual activity increases, just belief system will not work for future generations. I don't want to go into examples, I can tell you 1,000 examples. But how it was when I started teaching 40 years ago, how people were so based in belief system, and today how they're not based in this, absolutely unbelievable. How many people have moved out of strong belief systems of God will take care of them, they will go to heaven. These things are gone at a pace that you can't imagine.
They are gone.
They're gone. So now what is the way out?
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
No, I'll come. The thing is, this was giving them a psychological strength that God will anyway take them in their lap one day and they will go to heaven and whatever. As this collapses, people need solutions. Solace will not work anymore. If you want solutions, your seeking should be encouraged. If your seeking has to be encouraged, then you have to dismantle all belief system, otherwise you can't genuinely seek. Without realizing I do not know, seeking cannot be genuine. So what you think is Kashi, what you think is various structures here are largely in this direction. So I'm saying in the future, in many ways, this aspect, I'm not talking about just one physical manifestation of this, this aspect of seeking will become the most dominant thing in the world. Not because this is this religion or that religion. This is a natural thing that happens in human mind. Once their intellect becomes active, anything that does not make logical sense will get ejected from one's mind. If you keep on ejecting all those things which don't make logical sense to you, you will become a seeker because you realize you don't know a damn thing about life. So that is what this culture is about. This has to be preserved for future. In what way, how we do it as a nation is of course left to us. I hope we will do it without any conflict by being able to convince each other why this is important and what should be done about it.
So do, as a wise man, do you have counsel for fellow Indians, people of the same culture, whether they are Hindu or Muslim or whatever faith, on how to handle these conflicts?
I'm saying, when invasions happened, obviously raising of religious thing happened. That has been part of every nation, yeah. All right? Not only in India. Wherever these sort of invasions happened, mainly fired by the religion, naturally this raising to ground has happened. India is a land where in every street there were minimum two temples, if not one. So, literally every piece of India, there will be, if you dig somewhere, there will be some temple artifact or something. Are you going to rebuild all those things back? That's not going to work. But there are some iconic places which are like wounds in the culture which is hurting people. I think those things communities should sit down, talk it out, make an exchange policy or whatever. I don't know what is the solution because I don't know the detail of the dispute. All I know is there is a certain amount of pain and a wound-like situation. I think that should be assuaged so that India can move ahead. Otherwise, we will spend time fighting each other rather than walking together.
Just to add to this, you know, you said there has always been space for different viewpoints, you know, in Indian culture.
See, all this viewpoint business is all a very European thing. We don't have any viewpoint. We either know or we don't know. This is a way to be.
But do you think we are becoming intolerant as a society today?
This is what you need to understand. See, you have a viewpoint means you have an opinion. That's what you're calling as a viewpoint. The Indian way of doing things, at least the yogic culture is, you never have an opinion about anything or anybody. Every moment you look at this person. See, there are people with me for 20, 25 years. In my mind, I have not formed a single opinion about them. It's very difficult for people to understand how do you work like this. This is why for a whole lot of them, it's shocking how I address them today and how I address them tomorrow is according to how they are tomorrow, not as how they have been for last 25 years. Because opinion means you're straitjacketing yourself. Whether it's right opinion, wrong opinion, there's no such thing. Opinion means you're fixing your view. Viewpoint means the same thing. You're sitting on one perch and looking at it. You're not having a full view of everything. Now that he's already designated me as the wise man, so now I can tell you.
That's a safe thing to do for me. I take many chances in life, this one is all right.
So I'm saying there is a way that you bring clarity to yourself, that you don't make opinions about anything. Initially, it's hard. How not to form an opinion? The moment you form an opinion, you fixed another human being the way you think they should be. Or a situation, or a nation, or a culture, or whatever. Don't do that. And then say, okay, I agree with your nonsense, you agree with my nonsense. What is that? This will not lead to progress.
And does that lead to intolerance? Yeah, is that the name for intolerance? That you agree with my nonsense and the other guy says you agree with my nonsense?
See, that we are referring to as tolerance, isn't it?
To? As tolerance.
As tolerance.
You agree with my nonsense, I agree with your nonsense, we are tolerating each other.
No, but if you don't, then…
No. Tolerating another human being is the most undignified thing to do, indignified thing to do. See… Every day you came to me and I spoke to you like a friend and you thought I am your friend. One day you realized I was only tolerating you. If I had just asked you to get out, it would have been better, isn't it? Yes or no? Right now you're a journalist. Do you want this job because somebody's tolerating you, or do you want this job on the basis of your competence?
Well, I can tell you about media owners. They don't tolerate anybody who's not competent.
No, no, that's not true. I've met a whole lot of incompetent ones. Somebody is tolerating them, obviously. So, I'm saying tolerance is a very insulting word for me. If anybody is tolerating me, that's the last time I will see them. Because what a human being needs is acceptance. I accept the way you are. I may not agree with you. I may not agree with anything that you are, but I accept you for what you are right now, and then maybe both of us can talk if we want to talk, if you're willing to talk, or I can leave you because anyway I accept you. But this doesn't mean I have to agree with you. This much maturity we must bring, it's still a long way off, but we need to work at it.
And we are talking about, you know, this campaign, Save the Soil campaign. You know, the first question that comes to my mind is, how difficult it is to start a movement, then to sustain it. You know, you need to have influencers, you need to have some sort of political will, backing.
See, all this influencer business, everything is only to get the people to act. But once we have got the attention of the administrations, then the work is of a totally different nature. That process we have already begun, that is a long haul. That will not be in the public view. That will be done at a different level. That is a real hard work. But getting this going is very important. Without this, you will not get the notice of the administrations across the world.
So we have Anand, one of our subscribers from Power One, who says, what are the key objectives that you spoke about? But he says, did this Save the Rivers campaign deliver what you had set out to achieve?
It was not Save the Rivers, Mr. Anand, whoever he is. It was Rallying for Rivers.
Rallying for Rivers?
Rallying… No, no, it's different.
Yes.
Rallying for Rivers was to… because we wrote a river policy for tropical rivers, how tropical rivers need to be managed. If Mr. Anand obviously doesn't know what a river is, I'm saying this not with any insult. I'm saying this because this is across the board. People don't know the difference between glacier-fed rivers and tropical rivers. In our country, only 4% of river water is glacier-fed. Rest is all monsoon. Monsoon water has not come down in the last 100 years. The same volume of rain is coming. In fact, last year it is 27% more. Only thing is, it's not staying on the land. When the rain comes, it floods, and then there is an immediate drought within 3 months' time. This has happened mainly because there is not enough vegetation and organic strength in the soil to retain the water. The monsoon that happens in 70 to 90 days has to be held in the soil and slowly percolate as a river. Tropical rivers are formed drop by drop. There is no one place, because I'm saying this because a whole lot of people, you won't believe it, what sort of people, people in responsible positions believe from somewhere in the land, river is bursting out and coming.
I know, the Narmada and Godavari and Krishna.
They have this kind of belief systems. Tropical is formed, or river is formed drop by drop by the water that is retained in the soil. Largely it's coming from forest areas because that's the only place we have left with vegetation. So it need not start from there. It can start from your agricultural land if you had kept it well. If you had kept it full of vegetation, a river or a rivulet could start from your agricultural land. So this is what we are trying to put back. The policy was made within 3.5 months. The policy became an official policy because center doesn't have a geography of its own. It made a recommended policy for all the 28 states because it's a concurrent subject between the center and the state. So it is the policy right now, recommended policy, because center cannot insist on states doing it. 6 states got little active about the policy, others waiting for something disastrous to happen, and then we will act, of course, because the policy is in place. That is the guideline right now, guideline policy. Now, we saw that this is going to take endless amount of time if we go like this, so we started manifesting this in the form of Kaveri Calling. Looking at the success of that, today 9 UN agencies are partners with us because this is the largest project of that kind on ground in the world. And looking at the success of that, central government made a detailed project report for 13 river basins. We are doing Kaveri Basin, which is 83,000 square kilometers of land and 5.2 million farmers. But now they made detailed project report for 13 river basins, which covers 67% of India's land itself. Now we were trying to push it, nothing was happening. They made the detailed project report, no action on the ground. Just now, when I was probably in some part of Eastern Europe, in Bratislava or somewhere, I got the news that they allocated 19,000 crores for these 13 river basin projects. So this has taken me over 11 years to get to this place where actually there's a budget for action. Still, action needs to happen. But generally in a government, once the budget is allocated, it will start rolling. How fast, how slow? Because now this has to be distributed between states. Which state will get more? Rivers don't respect your state borders. They are flowing here. There are many complexities there. We'll have to work through those things. But at least a budget has been allocated. That means action on the ground. If these kind of budgets or enhanced budgets happen in the next 8 to 12 years, continuously, no matter which government is in power, 67% of India's soil will be above the crest. So movement has begun.
Above the crest, what does that
mean? Means we will have good organic content.
Ishwar Subramanian, he's one of our subscribers. He wants to know that, you know, you've been speaking with leaders, global leaders. Do you think there is a global consensus forming on this issue of save the soil?
Very much, because I also spoke at COP15. 197 parties participated there, including EU, CARICOM, Commonwealth
COP,
Nations.
COP25?
No, 15.
15.
This is UNCCD COP.
Oh, UNCCD. Okay.
Yes. The problem is the attention is all on COP26.
Yes.
Because that UNCCC gets all the thing.
Right.
Well, it is all about climate. How can you talk about climate without addressing soil when nearly 40% of climate change and global warming happens because of soil degradation? When people don't understand what is climate change, if they don't know the science of it, you are in Delhi, you stand in the hot sun for 1 hour, then move under the tree shade, you know what is climate change. Minimum 3 to 4 degree difference is right there, all right? So the land needs shade. The organisms need some shade. Something green must be there on it, or it must be covered with something where organic activity should go on and there must be moisture. This is only possible when organic content is high. Otherwise, it becomes dry. You go probably not in Delhi, in agricultural fields around Delhi, you just go and dig and see. Even if you go 15 inches, there is not an iota of moisture there. It's totally bone dry. This means it's dead. It's as good as sand. It needs to be moist, it needs to be covered, it needs either cover crops in summer or tree-based agriculture, something like this. We have converted over 1.3 lakh farmers into tree-based agriculture. Just come and see the transformation.
In which parts of the country?
In southern India.
I'd like very much to go.
You must come. Their incomes have gone up anywhere between 300 to 800%. Organic content has gone up, nutritional value has gone up. Water tables have come up. This is the most incredible thing. I always believed if water tables have to come up, minimum 50 to 100 acres of plantations you have to do, less than that it may not work. But 5 acres of plantation, water tables have come up. This is the incredible nature of the land.
Colonel Achar Shridharan also has one question. He's saying there are allegations of using forest land for development of Isha Yoga Center. So he's saying on one hand you're talking about protecting the environment and
Mr. Kannan, please tell him.
Colonel Shridharan. He's a veteran.
This is unfortunate. A military personnel should talk like this. If the Madras High Court says we have not taken an inch from it, is it good enough? It's not good enough. Tamil Nadu Forest Department says we have not taken an inch of forest land. Is that good enough? Not good enough. They make a digital survey after the new government comes and they say we have not taken an inch. Not only that, there are other aspects that our land is in the forest. So if we...
And the new government particularly isn't your devotee.
Nobody has ever been my devotee in the government. You must know this. Neither here nor there. Ever. anybody has been my devotee because I don't do the puja. You know, I don't get boons because I don't do puja for any government or any political entity. I don't do any pujas for them, so I don't get any benefits. I'm not looking for benefits because our work doesn't need that kind of political patronage of any kind. So, the Tamil Nadu government, Forest Department says we have not occupied. And court two or three times says we have not occupied. World Wildlife Fund comes and surveys and says we have not occupied. Where is the colonel coming from? He must enlighten himself. Being a man whose own uniform, for whom I have immense respect, that's an irresponsible statement to make.
And there was also one campaign that you had launched, Save the Tamil Nadu Temples. Where has it reached now?
See, it is not save for everything. All I said was, the government of Tamil Nadu presents in the High Court that 11,999 temples, we have not done any puja for last 4 years because we don't have money.
Right.
32,000 temples have only one person who is the caretaker, who is the watchman, who is the puja person, who is everything. 36,000 temples are earning less than 10,000 rupees per year. All right? And out of some 5 lakh acres of land and some 1.2 crores worth of square feet of building, they're earning 85 crores or something around that number per year. The Tamil Nadu government presents this in the High Court. Should I believe it or not? So this shocked me that over nearly 12,000 temples, there is no puja because there is no money. So I just don't want to simply believe whatever they said. I asked our volunteers to go and take videos. Really, is it dilapidated and what? They produced over 1,200 videos, which are very various states of dilapidation of fantastic architecture, which you cannot build today. Then I said, these temples, if you can't take care, people who are custodians should take care of this. Taking care of temples is not government's business. That's how I understood. But government says we are interested. At least it must happen. Some civilian custodians of the community should be there to ensure this happens. So I just filed a petition in the High Court. Please, all I asked for is that there must be an independent audit. When you say out of 5 lakh acres, you are earning 85 crores. It doesn't look nice to me. I said, let there be an independent audit and establish a commission how this administration should be done. Obviously, the present form of administration is not working for the temples. I am not a daily temple-going person by any standards. So, this is not about a personal interest. This was something the previous Tamil Nadu government filed. So I filed a petition saying there must be an independent audit and there must be a commission to look at the way these temples need to be administered. Obviously, it's not working. So I don't see what's wrong with that. A whole lot of people look at it in different ways. They think this is Hindu. I would have done the same thing if Islamic monuments were falling apart. I would have done the same thing. This is who I am.
Riti, since you have a question and you are particularly keen, why don't you ask the question yourself? She's the only one with a proper course. Okay. You can take
it. Hey, why don't you take it?
Just microphone be there, though.
Sadhguru, so you had mentioned that through meditation, we can go into, like, we can figure out different dimensions of life, something countering time. So we know rishis who can tell their past lives and they can talk about the future as well. So is this some sort of time travel?
Well, if summer comes, you can predict monsoon. If monsoon comes, you can see winter is coming. So is this time travel? No, a little long-term view of life, that's all. You see a few things a little more closely, you observe things a little more better than other people. Other people are busy with their own stuff. If you pay attention, so many things. Oh, This is time travel. They are going vertically in time.
Down. Yes.
So, the thing is, everybody or a lot of people in this country are very excited about somebody predicting their future. People make predictions because they have become incapable of making plans and executing them. It's very important we make a plan and execute that rather than looking for predictions of any kind, whether it's your personal life or nation's life or the world's life. It's important that we make the necessary plans and learn to execute that. Thank you.
So this will not be very kind to astrologers, professional astrologers.
Have I been kind to you?
That's a rational view because, you know, in this city, I can tell you that 8 out of 10 political figures, top bureaucrats, civil servants, even judges, somebody check out their patris, and until somebody gives them a favorable view, they keep trying new guys.
No, there you see, right now I'm riding to Lucknow.
Right.
I'm also asking them to check out what's the temperature. So what is the right time to leave? Should I leave at 12 noon? Should I leave at 3 o'clock? It's a decision I'm making based on astrology. I'm sorry, meteorology. So, I don't see anything wrong with that. It is just that I will not let it decide everything about me, but I'm choosing my time depending on the temperature. They may have some other view of similar kind, whether to do certain things at certain time or not, it's their choice.
Yeah, but not to say that, oh, so and so, you will live till the age of this. You can influence how long you live. On the upside or downside, isn't it?
If you once again come and do your inner engineering, I will make sure you live long enough.
Yes. So then astrologers will be proven wrong. So, I know that you have many things to do, plus you have to ride your bike. Which bike are you riding? Ducatis?
No, I'm riding a GT.
So, before you go on a bike ride, question. What's your view on the right to offend? Because it's a global debate now. It started with France. It's now come to India. It's now between India and Gulf. What is his right to offend? Should people have the right to offend? Should there be limitations? Or should there be no right to offend?
I feel you have no right not only to offend, not even to please me when I'm not willing. Individual rights must be respected. You leave me alone. I don't want to be loved by you. You can't say I'm walking on the street, I love you. Nor can you offend me. I'm saying we're talking about individual liberties and rights. Leave the individual for what he or she is. Why do you think you have rights over their life? What kind of liberty are we talking about?
Or the other one's faith.
Not only faith. I'm saying when you say offend, I can offend you in so many ways. Lot of people have taken to this, that they're constantly offending somebody, as you said, it's a right or it's their duty to offend people. I am saying, when we're talking about individual liberty being sacred, if I want to be left alone, please leave me alone. Why do you want to do anything with me when I'm not willing?
And will...
No, just to add to that, you know, you're talking about liberty, individual rights, and there was a huge controversy over hijab. So, do you think that
There was no controversy over hijab in this country.
No, there was in Karnataka.
No, it was in a school.
Yes.
But the children, if there also, if you want to practice things, that's up to you, but... Let us not misrepresent these things. There was no controversy over hijab. You can dress the way you want in this country. Nobody will ask you about how you're dressed, all right? But in a school, an institution decides. There itself, by the time you're 14, if you're saying, I have my rights, no, even the parents control 14-year-olds, right?
Yes, it was a school uniform issue.
And just to add one more thing, you know, there's one thing that the younger population is sort of struggling with. There's this phrase called burnout. So what advice would you give to the younger population?
If you do not make yourself competent to do what you wish to do, then you will burn out, of course. Like some journalist was here asking, why you're riding such a fat bike? Why can't you ride a 50cc moped? God damn it, you don't know nothing about machinery. 30,000 kilometers a moped will do in 100 days. So but similarly…
Why can't Sadhguru ride a nice bike?
It's not about nice, it must work, right?
Yeah, right?
And anyway, they're talking about all this because they don't know what it means to ride in various climatic conditions, terrains, all kinds of things. Even if they're half my age, ask them to ride one 10,000 kilometers, let me see, in 10 days. They will die, I'm telling you. I'm not trying to boast about myself. They will die, literally.
Or they'll kill somebody.
That's another matter.
So, what's the piece of advice you would want to give them?
See, if you want to do something in your life, if you do want to do many things in your life, first thing is you must build yourself to that capability. Without building yourself to capability, you want to do something that somebody else is doing, of course you'll burn out.
And Sadhguru, before we let you go, I can take liberties with you. Give advice to India and the Gulf countries right now to calm things down.
They'll calm down, they just have to do that reaction a little bit. It will calm down, people have deep trust in India, in the Gulf countries. They don't believe India will go that way as people are projecting it. It's unfortunate certain statements were made, whatever. I don't even know what's the statement, I'm just hearing from other people. But whatever was made, if it is hurting somebody, we just have to withdraw that statement and say, we're sorry about it, that's all. You don't have a right to offend, I'm saying.
You don't have a right to offend. That's the key takeaway.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
The Print of the Cuff, presented by IIFL Wealth and Asset Management, powered by K. Raheja Corp, corporate partner AU Small Finance Bank, in alliance with Jindal Steel and Power Limited and Indraprastha Polo Hospitals, airline partner SpiceJet.